had that in the hopper for Stan.
Let's get some blame going on.
Let's
out there.
Get that blame working. Oh, my gosh. So this is the second half of We the People Radio here on March the 8th, 2026. And free advertising of the week goes out to our new best friend, Robert Gutierrez at Hot Water Plumbing Hero. Their website is hotwaterplumbinghero.com. They're here in Reading. And, yes, if you hit critical mass and can't take a shower because your hot water heater is broken and your home warranty company is run by imbeciles, Robert can save you. We can testify to that. We even took a picture of him with our hot water heater just to prove it happened. Oh, my gosh. So, we are here with Professor Miche and Stan Ellis and Mike Ariza, and we're making a thing out of this gas deal. If they ever fix the problem, I'll be sad, in a way, because, you know, our cast of characters will go away, but it's been really enjoyable working with these guys, because between the three of them, they've got this whole issue pretty much covered from every vantage point. And if you are just, I don't know, waking up to this and you're thinking, oh, well, they'll just bring in train cars, or they'll just have more ships, or we'll just get trucks to bring in, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's not happening. Bottom line, short answer is that's not happening. So listen to the previous programs. Read the stuff that's on the site. You can get to it swiftly at gascrisis.org. And now back to Stan.
before we go back to Stan, I would like to go back to something you mentioned earlier.
Oh, we're going to go back to back to back, Stan?
Yeah, we're okay. Going to go back to back. The gasoline that we're going to bring in from India, you said, you know, what's the chances that they spent $700 million upgrading their refinery to make California-compliant gasoline? Who's going to test the fuel that comes from India to make sure it is California compliant? And you know, is there an agency assigned to doing that? And if there is, are they actually going to test all this fuel that comes in?
Well, I would think that's I would think that falls under CARB.
Yeah,
and that's one of the questions I'm going to have for them. Are you testing, and how often are you testing? And do you test every ship? Do you test every truckload? I want to understand the protocol. So when I get back to Sacramento next week, that's going to be one of my questions to CARB. I'm going to write them a letter.
Yeah, I think that's very prudent, because you know good and well, once that starts flowing, that's just one of those things that's going to get just quietly swept under the rug, and there won't be any report that we can read or tests that we can read, test results. They'll turn their back on that because it's solving the problem.
The only problem is, what if it is? The question I've been asking myself, what if it is, doesn't meet CARB standards? What are they going to do, stop bringing it in? Now we even got a bigger crisis?
Exactly.
So we have to be a little careful there.
Well, yeah, we got to be careful, but I think if we can, you know, bring this up now before our refineries close, I think it'd be pretty easy to check to see if India's refineries are compliant.
Yeah, our refineries are compliant. What about what they're bringing in? I agree with you. So I'm going to write a letter on Monday to CARB.
Yeah, because I think somebody needs to be over in India checking out their refinery to make sure that they're putting out California compliant gasoline. Because that's
all we care about.
Well,
because that's going to change the
world.
I think that, first of all, it's a brilliant idea, and it needs to be done. And then secondly, I mean, if you're going to send anybody over to India to check it out, then I think you ought to put in the same type of air particulate collection devices.
Absolutely.
That you have around California refineries. I think those should be installed around Indian refineries, and they should be made to comply to the same California standards that a California refinery has to comply to.
Right.
So if CARB makes an announcement where, you know, the estimated cost of compliance is, let's say, $300 million, those refineries around the world should be held to the same standard. They need to incur that $300 million investment, and CARB needs to verify that.
Right.
If indeed they are serious about climate change and the environment.
And
wait a minute! Now you're driving up the price of gas for us. There, you know, golly, we're going to pay more for gas because we're going to hold them to the same standard we have.
I think if you try to hold them to the same standards, they'll just sell their gas somewhere else. They don't need California. I mean,
well, of course not. They don't need California. California is just a market for them. They're going to move
on.
But the point is, you know, the point is one of consistency and hypocrisy.
Exactly. And if they can't prove that this gas is compliant or as you know, the same quality as what we make over here, then they need to lay off our refineries so we can make our own.
Well, I'm kind of curious, too. So since we have taken, you know, the CO2 is no longer considered a pollutant because that was always ridiculous, doesn't that sort of cut the legs out from under them, or are we just going to pretend that didn't happen since it was done by Orange Man Bad?
No, there's other contaminants in these emissions that I think bear scrutiny and inspection and things like that. But also, I think too, when you begin to look at these offshore refineries, it's not just the global emissions, but you also have things like worker standards, worker safety, human rights, things like that. So. You know, for example, we're importing a lot of gasoline from India right now, and India is the second largest contributor to greenhouse gases, or third largest in the world right now. Certainly greater upward tick in terms of more greenhouse gases are emitted in India in growth than the United States. So I think, you know, somebody needs to sit down and look at this coherently in a very meaningful and total manner. And so perhaps some of the legislation that Stan's talking about would at least get us somewhere along that pathway. It's clearly needed.
So a real pragmatic solution again, because I've been in science, and you're always solving problems. Real simple. This is really, really simple. We stop funding on the high-speed rail, and we put it in water infrastructure. And we grow more crops, and we have all the CO2 sequestration we need. And guess what? We can bring in more industry because we're all green. Everything you plant green needs CO2. So we just fix the big circle that we need, and it's just really simple. But nobody wants to listen because of all the money we're putting in high-speed rail.
And that's going so well.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you wrote. One of the things you wrote about, too, Aaron, on your email, I'm hearing a lot. You know, when Valero went down, we were all concerned of that we were at critical path with our ability to offload tankers. And we know when Valero went down, prices started to go up. And it was specifically because Valero shut down. But now you're seeing a lot. They're blaming it on Trump. So I just kind of wanted to bring that out, too, that the shutdown of Valero did start to have the effect that we had anticipated it was going to have.
Yeah, I look at that, and it's the timing is such. And then they were saying the other thing that was on there was the cutback on oil to China, a fairly decent percentage. What does that do for what's being brought in here? Have you looked at that?
Well, they're going to, whether they want the adversary or not, they're going to protect their own. They have a decent amount of oil supply on hand, but, you know, they get their supply cut off, which it has been right now, like 40% of it, and then they're exporting fuel. My understanding is just yesterday, the day before, Beijing basically gave a decree for all of their refineries to stop exporting gasoline and diesel fuel.
Oh, yeah, I was kind of curious about that. Well, that'll work out well for us.
Yeah, so to kind of put it in context for the listeners on this, if I can, Aaron.
Yes, please.
China bought, they were the largest consumer of Iranian oil. So they acquired about 90% of Iranian production. So 90% of what Iran produced for oil went to China. China was also one of the largest consumer, if not the largest consumer, of Venezuelan oil. So what happened in there was China has loaned Venezuela approximately $54 billion, and the payment for that $54 billion was done in oil. So oil for dollars. And the thing there was China was getting an incredible favorable rate. They were getting this oil at somewhere below 40% under Brent prices. And so under the new program that was done by President Trump, China's still being repaid for loans, except the oil's not being sold at 40% below Brent prices. It's being sold at market. And so when the president talks about it's a better deal for the Venezuelan people, that's why it's a better deal. They're getting a fair price for their oil versus under the old regime, they were not getting a fair price for the oil. So this puts China in a sort of an interesting situation as to where they're going to get their oil. Now, one of the refineries was just hit in Iran by the Israelis last night. And the question is, will the terminal tanker be hit, the maritime terminal tanker, also be a target of opportunity for the Israelis or the United States? This has a real detrimental impact on China. So China now is more dependent on Russian oil than it's ever been before.
Well, and also I heard that pretty much all the oil that goes to India comes from Russia. So, again, we'll be buying gasoline from India that's being made with Russian oil. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, I understand it's 40%.
It's 40%, yeah.
So think about that for a minute. If all of a sudden Russia needs more oil, they're going to cut off India. Guess what? That cuts off supply to us, indirectly, with gas and diesel. How about them apples?
Yeah.
Well, it has all of the things that we've been warning about, possibilities that can directly affect us, that just choke this state, they're starting to occur. You know, we had a list of about 8 or 9 things, and a few of those are occurring. We warned about this. It's not a surprise to us. We saw this as a possibility, and here it is before us right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so on that note, you know, really kudos to Professor Mish and Mike Ariza, because, you know, we've all been in the industry. They did a great job foreseeing this. But I said this morning, this is all talk. And what's really important, Aaron, is that you're bringing this to light to a lot of people that help them understand this crisis that we're going to be in shortly in oil and gas. So, so I have to do everything I can in my power to do something instead of just talk about it. I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of being reactive. But again, kudos to you for bringing up this awareness to everyone. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we really appreciate you guys' expertise. And you know, the bad part is with things like this, you wind up with a bunch of people spouting off. Like, there was a video that I got, and the 2 seconds into it, the guy's saying, well, you know, Valero was slated to go down. And it's like, okay, well, you're already not credible because you're behind the curve. So there's all this crazy information coming out there with people's opinions. And I think that's where the three of you are the most valuable, because you're really drilled into this, and it's factual. So when people are, maybe after the break, we could touch again on why the seemingly obvious simple solutions are not available. We don't have to, you know, belabor it, but the idea that there are no pipelines coming into California, you know, that the solution is not as easy as it might seem, because there are a lot of people that are like, oh, well, you know, we'll just bring it in from Texas, you know. Well, we'll just get it from Venezuela. It's like, yeah, okay.
How about we just drill our own?
What a great idea. Gee, Bill. Let's put Bill in charge.
Well, like Bill Dan saying about you, Aaron, and you bringing the awareness of this out and creating that domain, so people have something they can reference to look at what's the real story here.
Yeah,
what's
go look at the facts.
What's really going on.
Yeah, I really appreciate, and you guys' 10-page paper, I've labeled it as the comprehensive analysis, and it's kind of everywhere. It's on all the pages. And I really do hope people look at that, even if all you do is skim and read the parts that are in red. You've made it, like, as easy as possible. You know, you don't have to take a college course. Although, if I was going to take a college course and I lived by USC, I'd get in the professor's class because I think it would be super interesting. But
you're always welcome to come visit anytime you want.
I might just scurry on down and be a problem in the front row. And you have no idea. Okay. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be right back with the oil and gas guys. We're talking about gascrisis.org, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Leaving home out on the road, I've been down before. Riding along on this big old jet plane, I've been thinking about my home. But my love light seems so far away, and I feel like it's all been done. Somebody's trying.
Everything's a mess. if only they would stay. So, all right, you can't make companies produce, you know, I mean, yet. I think they'd like to do that. But they can't make them stay here. So in a free market economy where you're crushing your industry and you happen to live in California and you're going to run out of gas, jet fuel, propane, diesel, all of the above. People have all sorts of ideas, right? Like train, buses, I don't know, trucks. Why is that not going to work? Who wants to hit that one? Do I have to do
it? Well, California, there's a couple different things going on with California. One, we're geographically dispersed. You know, unlike an East Coast city or Chicago or even Dallas, we don't really have, we have San Francisco, but other cities such as Los Angeles, where I live, we don't really have a central business district. We have more of a dispersed population, dispersed commerce, dispersed business district. So it's not feasible to have, at least now, a public transportation system that would go to all the places that people would normally go to. You have that issue, you have the issue of safety on the public transportation system. I do believe there was a point in time where the Bay Area Rapid Transit System, BART, stopped reporting some of the crime on BART because it was detrimental to ridership and things like that. So these are valid concerns that people have when they think about using public transportation. Plus, there's the cost. So, you know, these are all very valid concerns, and they're hard to address. I think when it comes to the California High Speed Rail project, for me, I would love to have somebody have the authority under oath and ask them, you know, very simple questions like, can you go to Union Station in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, and get on the high-speed rail and take it and get off in downtown San Francisco? I'd like to hear under oath the answer to that question. I would also like to hear under oath the answer to the question is, you know, will you ever achieve the 200 miles an hour that you said you were going to achieve, or the 3.5-hour trip from L.A. to San Francisco that you said you were going to achieve? Some of the original representations that were made about that project, I would like to see those revisited and have people come back under oath and answer them for the taxpayers and for the policymakers.
Yeah, I'd just like to know where all the money went, because they haven't built anything, and they've spent, what was it?
I don't know.
200,
it's a lot.
$200 million or?
Oh, no, no. It's way north of that.
$13 billion?
Oh, no, it's way north of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, way north of that.
It's a crazy amount of money, and they haven't built anything.
Well, I'd like to address another issue. We hear about sustainable fuels and sustainable jet fuels, and so what they do is they take trap grease and they, through the catalytic process and a similar refining process, they actually make jet fuel. But nobody really accounts in the consideration, oh, we're using extra natural gas and we're using extra mileage on trucks to get to the refining place. And by the way, the refining place is losing money because they can't get the money they need. And then you take in Bakersfield, for example, we have Bakersfield Renewable Fuels. They're railing in from the Midwest, Iowa, soy oil, so we can refine it into jet fuel. None of this makes, you know, those are great ideas. And sustainable green is fine. But if fact remains, it doesn't make up, Professor, you'd know this, what percentage of our actual jet fuel comes from sustainable renewables? It's probably 1%.
It's minuscule. It is. And keep in mind, they're also talking about AB 30, which is ethanol. All right. And that's coming in from the Midwest on trains. And also from Brazil. Now, imports from Brazil have fallen, but I'd like to note that we know that Brazil has destroyed 24 million acres of rainforest to create agricultural zones for the production of sugar cane, for sugar, and sugar cane is used for ethanol, and that's what's exported to California. So, and not all cars will burn E15 product, and so getting this unbelievable 20 cents a gallon difference from ethanol, as claimed by the governor, is fantasy.
So sustainable, renewable fuels are fine, and that's nice. But if you do what's called a carbon intensity, there's a carbon intensity where they add up all the emissions from fuels and crude coming in from out of the country, and you take and California's carbon intensity, we're like 40, 50 on a carbon intensity, and everything coming in from out of the country is 85, 90. Professor, you correct me on those numbers, but so we put out the cleanest oil and gas in the world. Greenies, get off our back and let us operate.
Yeah.
So the data is there. The problem is, you have a narrative, and people bought into that narrative. They voted for that narrative, and they have to live with the consequences of that narrative. And so it's very difficult for them to come back. And of course, now the easy thing is to point to Trump. Well, Trump is going to be the answer to California's problems. Trump is not the source of California's problems.
Yeah, big difference.
So we're trapped in like this bizarre narrative of fiction that has us hamstrung and is getting ready to destroy the world, and yet, kind of like Thelma and Louise, we're just gonna, mash the gas pedal and hope we enjoy the wind in our hair, I guess.
We need to intervene. Part of the purpose of the supremacy clause was for a situation like this. It's part of the reason why the supremacy clause is ever done. Just something like this that's going on, Going back to the jet fuel and everything, those refineries go down, and pretty much every damn airport we basically have in the state will have very, very, very little jet fuel produced. Same thing with diesel. You got a couple of renewable diesel refineries, but we're gonna lose 3 or 4 million, probably about 4 million gallons a day of diesel is gonna go down along with the gasoline. So it's a whole encompassing problem here. Trucks, anything getting food to cities, the whole nine yards. Farmers, emergency equipment. ambulances, fire trucks, all of them that use fuel will be like 85% importing all of our fuel. That can't be done.
Yeah, it can't be done. And so if these four, if we were left with three refineries, just say for fun, let's say Chevron says, look, you know, we're sick of it. PBF's like, all right, we're all done. These guys are just fiddling around, and they actually do close down. What does that look like? Practical
disaster.
It's catastrophic. It really is. I mean, you've lost 76. If they close down, as I said earlier, and I did the calculation this morning, you'll lose 76% of all in-state gasoline refinery capacity from 2023 to 20 to whenever they close down. Now, if you lose 76%, you do not have sufficient infrastructure to make that up with maritime imports or rail imports. The infrastructure just simply isn't there without massive capital investment. And you're talking billions of dollars and years to build out.
Yeah, it's time.
That's a major problem. The other major problem that you have is, tankers. Not every tanker wants to come to California. And there's a finite number of tankers available in the world, about 7,000. And I just did the rates yesterday. And so I could, and let me look them up here. So I did the rates yesterday. So a tanker that would have cost us about $130,000 to per day for 2 million barrels of oil.
Wow.
Holy cow.
It's now costing $400,000 a day.
Wow.
Ruh-roh.
So it's tripled, right? And so that will be reflected, either way, that will be reflected in the cost of gasoline in the coming weeks in California.
But that's not just the gasoline at the pump. That's food prices. That's everything. Everything
that's
we
correct.
Get is connected to fuel.
There's an exceptionally strong correlation between what's called the crude price index and the food price index. And when you look at them, they are literally married at the hip, and they move exactly the same way in respect to exactly the same levels of velocity across the years. So when these gasoline prices go up or the crude prices go up, food prices are going to go up. And I think I mentioned to Stan the other day when I was talking to him Friday night, I noticed more tankers on the road, gasoline tankers on the road, than I've ever seen on any Friday night in 30 years living in California, taking the same road home. So two things are happening. They're scrambling to make their deliveries, and probably gas station owners are topping off their storage tanks.
Professor, you said it best. Professor said it best when he said, our oil and gas production refining in the state is 8% of our GDP, but he said it's the first 8%. And that couldn't be more well said.
Yeah, because without that, the rest doesn't follow.
And on top of that, we were importing 4% of our crude oil. Now we're importing 70% of our crude oil. So, I mean, Professor, correct me if I'm wrong, but this volatility in the oil pricing, the Brent pricing, it'll have more. It's going to have more of an effect on us because of how dependent we are now on imports of crude oil.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, fortunately, most of our crude oil now, about 60% of our crude oil is coming from, actually 48% is coming from South America. 30% came from the Middle East. So
that's nationwide?
A third.
California. Now the U.S. So California is three times more dependent on Middle Eastern oil than the U.S. The U.S. gets about 10% of its oil from the Middle East. California last year got about 30% of its oil from the Middle East. So we'll be scrambling to make that crude up, probably from South America, But then again, now you have the tankers, and you have an issue with the Panama Canal and the number of tankers that you're going to let through the Panama Canal and into it at any one point in time. Remember, the Panama Canal has significant national security implications. So you're not going to allow that canal to get flooded with tankers just because California doesn't have the appropriate fuel policy in place.
Such a nice way of putting it. The appropriate fuel policy in place sounds so much better than, you know, they...
Sounds like California better take care of business.
They signed up for the rubber room. Yeah.
Saying things we can't say on the radio.
Things we can't say. I know, everybody mute yourselves. Yeah, we need one of those, you know, what they do with you know, people, they put them in a room and let them all hit each other with big rubber bats. I think we're gonna have to maybe do that a little bit. I'll buy the helmets.
No, it's a tough, you know, it's a really, really tough situation the state got itself into, and you know, us three, and then also some of the work I've done with James Rector out of University of Berkeley, California, Berkeley. You know, we said, look, you got to keep these pipelines open, and you have to bring in offshore production, and you're going to have to do something to provide relief to the refiners, because you can't keep beating them over the head, because sooner or later, somebody's going to say, why am I here?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I want to break up with you.
Yeah, I mean, sooner or later, I'm gonna pull the plug and I'm gonna take my credit card and go someplace else, and that's what we're starting to see. It's reached the breaking point. Now the question is, will the California legislature? Doubtful that the governor can do it, but can the California legislature? Will they have the wherewithal to confront the situation and take it on with some degree of reasonableness, that remains to be seen. But we do know that President Trump is looking at it very closely and is thinking about different options that may be available to the federal government to provide ease to the California consumer. So we'll see what happens over these next, I would say, 45 days are going to be the most critical. Because keep in mind, what's going to happen over the next 45 days is you have the conversion to the summer blend. That adds at least 15, 20 cents a gallon to the price of gas. You have constraints on supply that we're starting to see, not only coming from the Middle East, but also for the tankers. That's going to create more stress on supply, and we have an increase in chartering rates, three times as much as they were just 2 weeks ago. That's going to be reflected in the retail price of gasoline as it comes into the state. And, of course, you have the automatic increase in the state excise tax that's occurring on July 1st. So we're looking at a significant series of events that will increase the price of gasoline for the average California consumer, period. It's inevitable. So the question is, will the legislatures do something about it, or will they defer, and President Trump will have to do something about it.
Yeah, and can you imagine? They would be forced, just based on kind of the way they view the world, to push back on that, which would be kind of interesting. And I'm kind of reminded of this cartoon I saw, and it was a big chicken, and he was wearing a chef hat and an apron, and he's standing there outside the oven with a peg leg, gnawing on a chicken leg, and he's like, wow, I guess we really are delicious. might have to change our state emblem there. Good Lord. Well, let's take a quick break. I have a terrific song for this is the one we hope that the final refinery guys are not playing secretly through their music at their plants. I hope they're not hearing this song, but I kind of think they might be. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm cutting your own promo during your own show.
Yeah, who set that up?
You're so vain.
Oh, my
Get
God.
Get it? Ba-doom, boom, Claudia Simon.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so I'm kind of hoping that the refineries aren't all secretly hearing the siren song of I'm free. I mean, you can't make them stay here. I mean, do you think if they change the policy, they'll stay, hoping that that's maintained? Is there a way to make it permanent?
I honestly don't think they're going to. But I just remembered something with the Chevron CEO maybe 5 or 6 months ago when he was commenting that California has been at war with the refineries for 25 years, and even back then, that gentleman was saying that, you know, things in California need to change. So what's the change? Valero shuts down, and they throw them with a $200 million and then growing cap and trade, cap and investment thing that they have to pay. So instead of making things better, they made things far worse. So that's why, I say it again, when I saw Mr. Walsh, he was very intent when he replied right back. He said, are you guys really going to close? Yes. So you got, 6 months ago, Chevron saying, hey, you guys need to change things. This is not tenable. And then instead of changing things, they made things worse.
So they fined him the $200 million for leaving? Or was that?
No, it's the cap and invest. The cap and investment. They made addendums. Carb did some addendums where it went up like 400%, I think, on what they have to pay for their buying carbon credits or whatnot. And by 30 or 35, that number on PBF letter, they put down what the numbers are, and I think it was something like $320 million they had to come out of their pocket to refine in California, and the other polluting refineries all over the world with the tankers that are sitting there in the bay right now, running their engines, running their generators with the smoke to the atmosphere. They don't have to pay a thing. So instead of improving, which is what the Chevron CEO was saying 5 or 6 months ago, hey, you guys need to work on this. You've been at war with us for 25 years. This needs to make a turn. We can't keep doing this. This is untenable. And then they come back with these addendums. No, we're going to make you pay a hell of a lot more for this cap and investment. Then, next thing you got PBF and Chevron putting out the letters. So their track record, I'm not very hopeful.
Yeah, it started out in 2021, he said it was $50 million, and by 2035 is projected to be $308 million. So, how do you make any money with numbers like that coming at you?
It's not just that. It's all of the emissions to meet CARB and our resources regulations. Those were hundreds of millions. Yeah. And then you have a turnaround where you have to turn around the refinery, and that's hundreds of millions. And kind of on that note, even from the oil producers, they go out and they drill a well. That well is 20, 25 years, maybe 30. You put in a refinery, you put that in for life. So these investments that these people have put into California were not, it's hard to shut them down. You just can't walk away. And I think the state, honestly, is trying to capitalize on that. It's hard to shut down. Mike Ariza, you can attest to that. You've been working in those refineries. In fact, you might add on to that.
Well, they're hard to shut down, especially there's a whole bunch involved. But, especially if you're going to shut down permanently, that's a whole different story. Their tanks are emptied. All the catalyst they use in conversion, it's gone. They ship all the coke out. The various units, it'll be very, very hard to restart them. Like right now, the Valero, with the condition it's in right now, and the fact that so many of their qualified people are gone, and by the end of the week, most of the rest of them are going to be gone, you're looking at 6 months minimum to restart the refinery. And we didn't even mention the fact that Valero... the professor can talk about this a little more, but Valero in Wilmington, there's a decent chance they're going to end up shutting down too. So we'll be down to two refineries.
Holy cow.
God.
Okay, so this is just my thought on this. The military then gets all the fuel in the state, and the people do not, right? I mean, well, there are people too, but I mean, just for national security purposes, you can't just cut the military off.
That's the problem. There's going to be no fuel in the state. There's going to be virtually no fuel being produced in the state, not even for our own civilian airports. Again, Chevron, Mike Wall said, Richmond produces 60% of SFO. PBF and Martinez produces the other 40%. That's 100%. That means SFO has no jet fuel produced in California. All the rest, San Jose, Oakland, SAC, they're all the same. So there is no jet fuel made in the state of California for our civilian airports, and there's no jet fuel made for our military.
Yeah, and you look at... In light of what's going on overseas right now, the amount of jet fuel they're going through has got to be just astronomical. If anything like that happened closer to home, we'd be in a world of hurt.
No, it's a threat to the whole nation. Now, that's the thing people don't understand in our state. This is a threat to the nation. This is a threat, as we wrote on the report, as the professor dubbed, it's a national security impact, just not California. It is
right.
National security.
Yeah, because it takes a lot of jet fuel to keep the military supplied. I mean, a lot.
Take a look at how much we're burning now, and just in the operations over Iran. I mean, it's an incredible amount.
Yeah.
You know, and on a normal day, I think we've said this before to the listeners. On a normal day, Travis burns about 200,000 gallons a day just keeping the doors open, keeping the gates open to the base up there. You know, today they've got to be burning well over that.
Oh, yeah.
Well over that. Okay.
Sure.
They're providing logistical support. Absolutely.
They're providing logistical support. So, you know, California can sit around and sort of think of itself as being unique in the Golden State and living in a dome. But the point of fact is the flaring that occurs in Iraq, which provided 22% of California's oil, by the way, in 2025, is an environmental disaster over there. Okay, it's far greater than anything that occurs in California's oil production or gasoline production in our refineries. So California has to, I think, if it wants to be, it has always viewed itself as a leader, as the state that's out in front of everybody. Well, fine. You know, if you're in front of everybody, guess what? You have to lead. And now California is sort of in a situation where it's not leading anymore.
No. Well, there'll be we'll have to change our motto. We'll be called the stationary state. Like, can't go anywhere.
Well, it'll be sort of sad to see what happens to California, because sooner or later you begin to implode, right? It's a combination of factors. How many companies have left under Gavin Newsom? Over 200. Population has, we've lost a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives under Gavin Newsom. So I think, you know, how many houses have been built in Pacific Palisades in a year? I think they're up to a whopping 13 homes have been restored and rebuilt and certified for occupancy. So, you know, I think at some point the data has to be recognized rather than just the narrative. And we have to quit looking for a convenient excuse. We have to look internally amongst ourselves and look ourselves in the eye and say, yes, we created this mess, but we can get ourselves out of this mess.
Yeah, it won't be easy to get out of it, but we definitely have the tools and the resources to get out of it. We always have. We had all the resources prior to us shutting everything off. I don't really understand why they can't see that and bring it all back, and we would be the Golden State again.
So,
well, it comes down to an ideology, the greenhouse gas agenda, and when the price of gas goes up, it's Trump's fault.
Yeah, and this is a terrific opportunity in a terrifying way to get right to the precipice and force them all to look over the edge. I mean,
right.
I can't think of anything that's pushed us this far.
No, especially with the letters that just came out.
Yeah.
No, and when you read those letters, you know they're not messing around. I mean, this is an ultimatum, more or less.
Yes. Well, it's an opportune time for them to flex their muscle. They've never been able to flex their muscle. Well, now because Valera went down, and now because of the world stage that we're in, and all of the data that professors put out, guess what? It is an opportune time to flex their muscle, and I would flex it to the max if I were them, because this is their chance.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, I would be surprised to see Marathon join. Hopefully, that would be a good thing if Marathon joined in with their own letter, too.
Well, Mike, what does Marathon produce in that plant? Don't they do a lot of renewables up there, or what's your understanding of what they produce?
They were 170,000 barrels a day of crude, but all I've seen is they're producing like 40,000 renewable diesel, and that's pretty much it. And then their refinery down in Southern California is the biggest one in the state. It's bigger than the Chevron refineries.
Right, but up north, they pretty much all renewables up there, right?
It's all renewables. That's why I was saying, Professor, Valero's down. If BBF goes down, Chevron goes down, there's no jet fuel made in Northern California. No jet fuel, no gasoline. Northern California is zero.
And so what are we considering Northern California? I know that, depending on where you live, they think Monterey is in Northern California.
The Bay Area refineries.
Okay.
The Bay Area, Sacramento.
North.
Well, Sacramento and the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, all that. That's where the refineries are in Northern California. They're down.
Concord, Richmond, Martinez, Benicia.
Sure. But I mean, so there's, and there never was anything north of that. So all of us who live north of that are
dependent on those refineries.
Our pipeline and your pipeline to Redding, pipeline to Chico, they all come from the Bay Area. Pipeline to Reno comes from the Bay Area, goes through Sacramento.
Yeah, and you see all these diesel trucks, 18-wheelers going up and down the freeway, delivering everything from food to TVs, all going to get more expensive, and there are going to probably be shortages because those truckers aren't going to come into California if they can't get fuel.
No.
They just won't come.
Well, you can't.
Yeah.
Well, look what we did.
You're right.
California Air Resources Board already did this with forcing all the trucks to change over their, their catalytic converters and all that stuff.
Right.
We had to make all those changes, and so then a lot of trucks weren't able to haul, so they had all these transfer stations at the border so we could have different trucks haul things across the border. So here we go again. Somehow we survived that one. We jumped the shark on that one, but they may not be able to jump the shark twice.
No, not on this one.
Well, men?
This one's way more difficult. Aaron, way more difficult.
Yeah, we've got a lot more moving parts.
Yeah, there's not an easy workaround here, okay? And just simply, blaming it on the president is, naive.
Not going to fly.
Naive.
Boys, we've run out of time, but we do have a shout-out to USC on behalf of the professor to close out the hour. So be sure to send out gascrisis.org. Do a lot of reading, watching, and listening. And we will talk to these guys again for an update. You're listening to We the People.